You're listening to Butter Cuts. It's Tuesday, March 16th, 2021. On today's episode, we talk the Players' Championship. We do a quick recap of the European Tour, but mainly the Players' Championship, JT's win, and is Bryson's chasing distance hurting other players in the game? Enjoy. Welcome, everybody, to the Buttercuts Podcast. Weston, how are you this evening?
Doing good.
Good. How did you... No snow. Snowmobiling for you this weekend. No. But there was a little snow in your weekend.
Plenty of it. My goodness.
It got a little crazy on Saturday. We just got just a teeny bit here. But it looked like you got a few inches. It looked like anyway from your pictures. Yeah,
it came down hard. Saturday morning, it was like Friday was pretty warm. I was like, cool, maybe we'll get out. And then Saturday morning, it started coming down, and it was just thick. So I had like 5 inches in my backyard. But
jeez, that's not golfing weather. I think you guys got hit a little bit harder than we did up here, a little bit more north. It seemed like that Alpine, that area there, kind of got hit a little harder, because I know that Alpine had to close. There's a couple of other ones that weren't able to be open. But yeah, it was not the weekend it was the previous weekend. For sure, which I didn't get out and play the weekend before. But yesterday was pretty good weather. I was actually able to get out yesterday and play a little golf, which we'll talk about a little bit later on. Just a funny moment from my round that was okay, but still shaking the rust off, not getting out as much as I want to. So, but a lot of good. And not a ton of bad, so that's always better. But let's kind of get the European Tour out of the way. I don't want to say it like that and be a little disrespectful, but when you have a tournament that's its name is the Commercial Bank Qatar Masters, it going up against the Players Championship, it's not going to get a lot of play. But Anton Rosner, or I don't know, the Frenchman, gets his second win on the European Tour. The course was Education City Golf Course. And they got some names over there for their golf courses, for sure. Wild. But looking down the field, obviously, all the top players were over the Players' Championship. So the field was a little bit limited. But good on Anton getting his second win of his career on the European Tour. So now we'll get into the meat of the conversation, the Players' Championship, where JT comes from behind over the weekend. And I think they said he was like on outside of the cut line after 27 holes or something. I think it was, if I recall right. And then shoots a record tying weekend round at 132. Was it 132? To get the win. I think it was Fred Couples was one of the other ones. And I remember seeing it. And so Fred Couples got the win. And then I think, I'm drawing a blank on the other guy, but he didn't get the win. He didn't come from behind and get the win. So 132 tied a Player Championship weekend record.
Yeah.
But it was kind of interesting because he was just kind of hanging around until the ninth hole, and then just kind of caught fire there for a second.
Well, that's what I was thinking about it, because I mean, he was pretty far out of it after day one and two.
Yeah.
And then come day three, obviously awesome score, 64, and he's at minus 10. And then Westwood was at minus 13. And somebody posed the question, who's going to win, Westwood or Bryson? And I saw Justin. I'm like, no, there's no way he's going to come back and do that. But man, was I wrong? I was wrong on a lot of stuff, and I'm going to admit that.
There was speaking of being wrong, our picks were not stellar this week. Your pick, Finau, and I texted you after I saw what he was after 10 holes. I was like, oh, wow. Not a great, he was ended up, I think up through 11 on his first round. He was 8 over par. I mean, got a couple back on that day and then shot 3 under in round two, but not nearly enough to get it back into making the cut. And my guy, Morikawa, made the cut, but didn't do anything. Had a really bad third round, had a good fourth, final round, but yeah. I believe anyway, but yeah, just, yeah, I'm glad. Hopefully nobody put any wagers on our picks. If they did, that's your fault.
Yeah, no kidding. Don't trust us. There was actually some pretty remarkable high scores. And if you had a chance to see or follow Ian Poulter on Instagram, he laid it down hard. And he was sitting in the players' lounge, and at the table was him, Rory McIlroy, Tyrrell Hatton, and Henrik Stenson. And I believe this was after day
one. Like a combined like 35 over.
Well, it was pretty close. A combined 29 over in those four players. So this course had some teeth, and that was cool. It was great to see.
Yeah, the first day, I think the first round scoring average was 73.9. Dropped a little bit in round two, but I mean, you still had some guys, you know, shoot some good scores. You know, the cut ended up being, I think, even was the cut line. So it was playing tough. Like I said, you get those greens firm like they were, it can play tough, and you can just get, there's some spots that you can just get yourself in trouble out there. And then, you know, 17, the hardest 120 to 30 yard shot in golf. I mean, they're hitting sandwiches up there, and like, not even on the final round, it's not even close, which was really crazy. You would think that, you know, somebody would have knocked it, but I don't think anybody got it really close in those final like four groups when I was watching it. So it's a tough golf course, can play tough when it gets firm.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun to watch, and I think this course has just so many iconic holes where it's not just like the one hole. It's like, oh my gosh, here's 15, here's 16, here's 17, here's 18.
Yeah.
And it is just, it's the toughest, most brutal three closing holes like in any tournament. It's incredible.
Well, on 16, you just have to hit such a good tee shot right out of the gate, right? To put yourself in the spot. And then the second shot is obviously no bargain with, you know, with that bunker with the oaks in it that Westwood found himself in, which when I was watching that, it looked like his line was, and I don't know whether Shot Tracker picked it up wrong or what, but it looked like it was well right of the, it had plenty of clearance on the right to get by those trees. But I mean, it was right. When you look at it, when you watch the replay, it was right in the middle of them. I'm like, I think Shot Tracker missed that one a little bit, because it looked like it was just curving just to the right of it, gonna bounce, take two hops, just funnel right in there to that right pin. But
and then to be, you know, maybe these guys are anywhere from 260 to 240 out, but to have that green right next to the water.
Yeah.
Like it's to get it close, and especially the way JT attacked that hole all week, he hit some amazing shots on that hole. So, you know, kudos to those guys that took advantage, had the cojones to go and attack that green, because it's beastie.
Yeah, it was, like I said, that kind of sealed it up. He makes a good two putt on 17, and then a little shaky two putt on 18, to be honest. That two footer wasn't like dead center. But that, and then, like I said, you got to get a couple of breaks, and he did with his five wood that he hit on the 18th hole. I mean, that thing, if it bounces a foot left, it keeps going left, and it's in the water.
That is a crazy hole, and you want to aim right. And I don't know. What do you think the most strategic play is? Because I've heard both ways, like aim right over the water and you know, maybe hit a fade. But most people that hit a fade, they tend to just hold off too much because they don't want to like double cross it. And then they're fanning it way right. Yeah. And way right on 18 is no bueno. So
I think you just need to pick. Like I think Justin, he pulled it. He had to have pulled it a little bit, right?
That was a sniper.
I mean, it was hit hard, but it was pulled. I think you just got to pick a good line and with your shot shape, right? Or these guys anymore, Bryson's hitting like a four iron or whatever he hit off of that tee. So it's one of those things where you just have to get it in a spot that you can hit it at that green. Cause I mean, obviously that, that Sunday pin placement, it's on the left, but you've got quite a bit of room on the right to filter that in.
So and that's not, the shot. Yeah.
So it's not like it's a super tough shot. Second shot. If you can get the distance, it'll bounce up there, and it's not a tough up and down as you saw pretty much all day. Although, I mean, they said it was playing the toughest. It was the toughest hole all day, but I think that's more contributed to the tee shot on that.
Yeah.
That being said, what do you feel about the tour putting in course out of bounds to the left?
Oh, that was. Ugh. You know, that's just it though. Like the only guy that thinks to play it different is Bryson. And had he practiced it like he would have during the practice rounds, they would have caught it anyways. So whether he talked about it beforehand or he practiced it on a practice round, people would have heard. And it would be a significantly easier hole. But I
mean, does it make it I mean, he talked about it, but I was looking at it and you look at the landing area and it's not like you're getting just a really cushy easy lie over there either. You've got some heels over there, you know, you're coming out of the rough, you still got to carry all that water. But does it significantly make it significantly shorter?
Well,
the big thing? I didn't read much about it. I just saw it and I was like, if the one guy's going to do it, you know?
Yeah. What makes it better is there is a larger landing area because there's just this kind of rough area that's wider than the actual fairway on 18. So, and then to the left of that is an actual fairway to another hole. So when you think about that, it's an ample landing area. And then the most advantageous aspect to playing the hole on the left side of the lake is that the green actually is receptive to your shot.
Yeah, even
if it comes out of the rough. Yeah, it actually will stop the ball. But if you play a draw and you hit in the front of the green and your ball just keeps rolling, like I've seen so many of those just drip right into the water.
Yeah.
Because the green funnels towards it. So it totally changes the whole.
But I'm just like, if it was meant to be out of bounds, it would be out of bounds, right?
Yeah,
that's to me. And then they did to say, yeah, we want it to, it's for the safety of the fans and the volunteers. BS. Like, just tell it how it is. We don't think that that's the way the hole should be played, so we're implementing an in-course out of bounds.
That's what it really is. Safety of the fans. If that was the case, they wouldn't have any fans on the course, because how many times have players hit balls into the fans? Like every other hole.
Yeah, a lot. So it's just, I'm like, just get over it. If he wants to play it that way, let him play it that way and see how it shakes out, right? And then you can always put that in there next year as, oh, that's a feature of the hole. Now it's out of bounds over there.
But like, how many times do you go to your local course and you go, oh, it's so much easier to just play this other fairway over here? Like, you have one of those holes on like every course you play.
Yeah, exactly.
And so it's not like new to golf.
No, I thought about it. Like I said, another thing that I thought about it this weekend, played Valley View, and the ninth is a par five that it's a dogleg right around water. Right, that you can carry the water, so it's not like that. But I talked to a buddy of mine who plays up there quite a bit, and I was like, have you ever thought about taking it up 18 fairway? Because it does. It shortens the cover on that and takes out some bunkers. I mean, it does. I mean, like, if you hug a little bit left, or if you do squeeze it a little bit right, there is some there. But I'm like, it kind of takes it where you can put it there and just kind of swing away. And if you pull it a little bit, you're going to probably hammer it and you're over that water anyway. But I'm like, I don't know if it does anything. I didn't go that way, but I was like, oh, is that a possibility of doing that?
Yeah. And there's just some courses where they know that's a problem, so that it's always been that way. Like Fox Hollow, and you play number 10. Like dogleg left par five, could you play it on number one? Yeah, and you could cut off at least 100 yards, but they put an in course out of bounds, and it's always been in course out of bounds.
Always, it's always been there, and I always hate it because I still think if you want to play it that way, because you still have to hit a shot over the trees, and you have to do a couple of other things that you can do that. Really, if you want to take away somebody's option to do that, just grow up some trees so they can't take that line. And you're good. Do something over there. And like I said, it's the same thing. Local course, Glenmore, number six, right? It's in course out of bounds. I'm like, if they just put a fairway bunker on number five down in that area, that's going to get some other people thinking a little bit on their drives on five, because it'll be in that spot. But if you put it there where you're like, oh, yeah, you can go and take this way, but there's a good chance that you're going to end up in this bunker. So I don't know. I think there's ways that you can deal with that without in course out of bounds. But anyway, because I don't think he played it very well. If I recall, he parted the last two rounds, and the one on his second round was a really good. Far, but I think if I recall, they say he played it bad, but no, he parred all three rounds or all four rounds, so it's not like he was bad on that hole, but it definitely made it a little bit more difficult for him. Unlike 16, which was the only par five that he birdied in the final round, which was crazy. The line that he took on 16 was nuts. It was just straight nuts on that.
Well, he went through the trees.
Or I guess he took it over the tree. So.
Yeah, that was great. I think his camera caught him and he turned the way and he's like, yeah, driver 9-iron. And granted, his 9-iron is the length of a 6-iron and has the loft of an 8-iron, but it's 9-iron. So.
Yeah, neither here nor there. But, I mean, with the good comes the bad, right? With Bryson in both respects. And he gets his day off to a rough start.
Yeah.
Four holes in. His tee shot on number four. Let's talk a little bit about that. Cause it was, you know, I was playing while this was going on, and one of the guys I was playing with is like, he's like, Bryson topped it. And you know, I was just watching it here, the replay of it before we started recording. And I was like, he didn't so much top, he just drove it into the ground. But I mean, it's still funny to watch, you know, guys on the tour, like when Molinari did it at Pebble Beach. Molinari's was more of a top. Then you watch DeChambeau top it. Makes guys like me, who number 17, par 5 at Valley View. So it's to kind of frame the hole. There's water that kind of, there's a little ditch that runs kind of right in front of the tee box.
Yep.
And around, and you know, goes into two ponds on the left, and there's a pond on the right and a tree on the right side of the fairway, probably about what? Probably 280-ish out. Mm-hmm. I would say in that area, 270, 280 out. So it's never been my favorite hole, because I prefer to play a cut. So I'm cutting it right into that tree a lot. And it's just never been my favorite hole. So I get up there, it's a little downwind. I'm like, oh, I can kind of go after one, and I've been hitting the driver pretty good all day. Except for that one. the water is about 40 yards in front of me. Yeah. Topped it. Just dead topped it right into the water. And where it is it's like, there's the tee box, you got the back tee box that I was on, and then it goes down into the tee box is one ahead, and then it's a downhill, like another few yards to the ditch. And I'm like, it really, okay. Yeah. I could go hit a five, my fairway wood from basically 15 yards up, or drop it right behind the thing where I'm going to have to hit a 7 iron to get over, because there's cattails and stuff. So I just retee, hit one down the middle or down the left side. May have, you know, just a really good shot. I'm like, oh, that was easy. After that, then hit. I have about 250-ish, 5-ish, but it's severely uphill to that green. And hit a five wood up to just off the front of the green. So good, really good fairway wood, and we're playing a skins game. I birdied 16, but we're validating, which is awesome, right? Yeah. Par 5. I'm like, all right, I should have an easy validation on this hole. So I get up there, and my playing guy that I was playing with, he hits one, but he hits a 5 wood from just in front of where I was on the right side of the fairway. Pins back left. So you got to cover a bunker uphill. It covers a bunker, hits it on there. And I'm like, well, okay, I can hope for it. And I think he needs tight, because it's right at it. But he was back. We're playing with my buddy, his dad, and then my buddy's cousin who plays at Westminster College here in Salt Lake. And I'm up there with his cousin, and I'm like, let's just act like I chip it in, like after I hit it. And then I look at him, and he's like, what are you? I was like, let's just act like I chip it in, because he's down there. My buddy's down there hanging out with his dad, so he can't see because of the elevated thing. I'm like, let's just pretend. And then I talk to him. I'm like, why don't I just make it? So it's about a 40 yard. Probably about a 35, 40. Yeah, probably about a 25. I'm trying to think in terms of feet because that pin's back there. Probably about 25, 30 yard chip, right? So I hit it and I'm like, that is exactly where I want it. I'm walking it. And my buddy's walking up the hill right behind it. I just jar it for par. And he's like, I couldn't see it. He's like, I saw you hit it. He's like, and as I was walking up, he's like, I got just enough high enough that I could see the ball going in as he was walking up the hill and getting over the thing. And I'm just like, he's like, I've never seen anybody make a re-tee par. So I almost validated. He made a birdie to steal it. But still, I was like, that's the craziest thing about this game, right? I hit probably the worst shot I've hit all day, followed by probably the best three shots that I hit all day. But that's why we keep playing the game, right? Yep. And because of stuff like that. So
awesome.
Unfortunately, Bryson didn't have that same luck and made a six on number four.
He got hammered. And just thinking about his game, like, and I don't think TPC Sawgrass is one of those courses you can really just smash it. You have to have that accuracy off the tee and around the greens. And I just didn't see it. It was a very tough tournament for Tiger to win. Mm-hmm. And he did win it twice, which is amazing, but he always had trouble because he wasn't always the most accurate off the tee. But he did really well at Bay Hill. So those are some interesting aspects to Bryson and probably, you know, what courses we can expect him to play good on.
Yeah. And he obviously ended up two back. Yeah. But you look at it and, you know, he hits a shot like on 16, which it really helps him. But he also, if he hit a couple of shots where, like, if you're hitting them, you just can end up in such a bad spot because of the lines that or his how far he can hit it. And if he misses his lines, he's really toast. He gets himself in a really bad situation. Bad spot. So I think he handled himself relatively well. Like I said, whether, you know, it translates every time or he has to be on, you know, that week, or whether he's going to, like I said, once in a while, he'll play good on a course like this. But I don't know. It was, like I said, JT can get it offline too, but which was kind of interesting to see him win because he can get it offline a little bit with the driver. So it was fun to watch him, like I said, I was just kind of following on my phone. And he was just plugging along and, you know, mm-hmm. even through the front nine and then, you know, goes birdie, eagle, birdie to all of a sudden, whoop, I'm there. I'm right back in it. But again, Westwood, another 54 hole lead and just couldn't quite hold it. Like you said, he just makes little mistakes that just seemed to cost him, right? Not making a birdie on 16 was a killer. Yep. The three putt on 17, not an easy putt, but I don't think he took a line. I mean, I would have thought he would have been a little bit more aggressive with his line on 17.
Yeah. Yeah. For him, it's kind of just too little too late. I mean, awesome birdie on 18, but, you know, he needed a couple more strokes in there to be aggressive. I don't think his choice of going for the green on 16 was the best. I mean, he is sitting two back and he's got to make a move. He's probably thinking easy birdie if he gets up close, but really just turned on him getting in that bunker under the tree. So Had he just laid up to have 100 yards in, he probably would have stiffed it and made the putt. But
yeah, was he two back going into there, or was he just one? Because I think he was just one back. Because Justin birdies to go one ahead. Yeah, because he birdied 14 to tie. And then Justin, so he's only one back at that point. And like I said, and I don't look like he hadn't, and it fits his shot shape. He does hit a cut pretty, you know, it's kind of his go-to shot. So you would have thought that he would have been able to sneak it by there, but I don't know. Like I said, he should have trusted maybe his wedges at that point to get it done and you know, then give himself a chance, because he's, you know, he makes four there, and then I think it takes a little bit of the pressure off, right, on 17, because you're not really looking for a birdie on 18. He does make it, but I don't think you're counting on a birdie on 18.
No,
for sure.
Not. And that pin on the right on 17, that is danger, and that's, you know, kind of throws back to the time where some of those players that won it were super aggressive on 17, like Sergio or Ricky Fowler. That was insane to see Ricky Fowler birdie that hole. Was it two or three times in a row to win? But
yeah,
he birdied 17, just going right at it. That was amazing. Just
right at it. But like I said, and still think that with Westwood's shot shape, right, because he could cut right, hit it right over the little bunker with a little cut, and he doesn't get in much trouble. But I think he just got tentative and just hung on and kind of hit that little pull and just doesn't give himself a real chance on that one. But I don't know. So I had a buddy of mine post this, and my guess is you were not sick of it per se, but he was like, is anybody else tired of the whole better than most talk? They did a lot of it on Saturday. It was, it was kind of nuts.
I mean, they changed the flag to say better than most, and
the TW, and it was interesting.
I
mean,
I don't know if they would have done it had Tiger actually played in the tournament.
Right.
And so I just think with the circumstances, the players, the PGA Tour, maybe as a thank you or something. But yeah, I mean, it was cool. I think the most impressive part to that was not saying that that shot was better than most. But if you go back and watch it, like 6 feet out from the hole, the other announcer, Johnny, he's like, how about in? And he called it before it was even close to the hole, which is pretty crazy to do that. But
I mean, if you look at that pod, it is ridiculous, because you saw the guys where he was. And I mean, Lee Westwood makes one on a shorter but similar line. I mean, to make that putt is just dumb. It was crazy. We won't oversaturate it. We'll hear it again about it again next year for sure.
I will say one of the coolest side things that happened during this tournament was on social media, and Steve Elkington put out on his Instagram channel called Secret Golf. He actually draws the hole, and he does a breakdown of why it's designed this way and how you should play it. It was the most like enlightening thing I'd heard all week. And it, obviously Steve Elkington, fantastic player, but man, to see him break it down, like why is 18 the way it is and why is it genius and why you should play certain holes, it's really, really cool. So if you get a chance, check out Secret Golf, follow Steve Elkington. He knows a thing or two about winning the Players a couple times. So Really, really cool to see him break it down.
Yeah. Steve Elkington is, he's a pretty interesting guy. I don't think I follow that page, but it would be interesting to see him kind of draw the hole and kind of why it's done the way it is.
Yeah.
Cause it'd be interesting to see from a, cause I don't think, does he design any, any courses, or is he just kind of a golf nerd like us?
He is literally us, but a professional golfer. That's pretty much it. He's total equipment junkie. He loves to experiment and try golf equipment. Obviously just one of the purest ball strikers that's walked the tour. And yeah, just has a really cool attitude about things. And so he's actually like one of those guys you're like, I think I'd want to hang out with him. He's cool.
Yeah, it was like I said, that would be interesting. I think I just followed him on Instagram so I can get a little of that, because I've always liked when he's done interviews, he's always an interesting guy to listen to. So, But other than that, what else stood out from the players?
Yeah, besides
the notables that that missed the cut.
Yeah. I think the only other thing is really the equipment highlight for JT. I mean, obviously Titleist top to bottom in his bag, and he's been playing the same stuff for quite a while, but still has the last generation TS3 driver. So yeah. Hasn't upgraded to the TSI yet.
Well, I think he put it back. I think he did go to the TSI at one point, but then, cause I didn't even realize it until one of my employees, actually a buddy who's an employee, said, hey, did you see that JT had the TS3 back in his bag? I'm like, no, I didn't even realize it. But like I said, comfortable with it. He may not get the pop off of it, but he may stay way more consistent with it, which is why he put it back. He may have put it back in the bag for this tournament.
And I think the other highlight too is the 620 MB iron, and Titleist doesn't stamp anybody's names on the irons. As of recently, they've started marketing as to who had the biggest inspiration in the irons. And if you remember the 716s with kind of a crescent muscle in the back with a little bit more offset on them, that was inspired by Adam Scott. The 718s, can't remember if that was just a design thing, but what JT did with the 718s is he pretty much bent out the 716s, he bent out most of the offset to keep them pretty straight.
Right.
And that came in play with the design of the 718s and also the 620s. And so ultimately, what I gathered from all the research I've done is the 620s are pretty much the way JT wanted them. They're basically his iron, how he would have designed them. And he's been gaming them and loving them. So
awesome. Yeah. Like I said, he obviously hits them well. But yeah, it's interesting to hear stuff like that, right? Because it kind of makes you feel like, oh, Titleist is actually listening to some of their guys out there, and they should. Obviously they have their research and development teams, but the guys who are actually playing them, whether that translates over into the general public playing them, that's that's a whole different story, which is why they have the CBs, right? The T100s, the T200s, the T300s, and the T400s, which are just basically a hybrid. I don't know if you've seen the T400s. They're big.
Yeah, they're
they're big.
And I think the last piece on his equipment is his wedges, actually. So he has radar stamped on his wedges. There's two aspects that I think are kind of funny. But the first one is that it was kind of a joke, like, oh, you're so accurate with your wedges. It's like a radar. and he had it on there, and then he got a new set of wedges and it didn't have radar on them, and then he didn't hit them very well. So he's like, no, my next set, I need radar on them. And so ever since then, he's always had radar. But me, you know, growing up here in Utah and yeah. actually knowing Mike Reed, the actual radar, I was like, wait a second, because this is a guy who won like accuracy in on the PGA Tour for like fairways hit or greens and reg. So, I mean, this guy is an actual like super duper accurate golfer who won those titles. And so it was interesting to hear that aspect of it and have and understand that history of Mike Reed too. So,
yeah, well, yeah, like I said, and I think we did discuss this because he's won a couple times since we've been co-hosting together. And I think that was brought up, and it's like I said, it's a superstition, but like I said, as soon as something, you know, as well as you know, as soon as something doesn't work that you've changed, you're like, oh, it's done. It's out of here. Yep. Especially something like wedges, right? You just, whether it, I'm sure it changes nothing in the performance of the wedge, but mentally it gives him some confidence. But you know, going back to Bryson and the defending champion of the Players, Rory McIlroy, who did not make the cut after firing a first round 79 and then a second round 75 and missing the cut at 10 over, came out that he feels like his game has been hurt and his swing has been affected because he started chasing the distance like Bryson is.
Yeah.
I don't know. He's the first person to come out and say it's adversely affected his game, but like you said, I think Spieth, who, I mean, made another cut. So, I mean, he's like making cuts constantly now. Yeah. But I think that's really what kind of set him back, is he tried to chase a few extra yards. He may have not been, obviously, because it was before Bryson did what Bryson did. But you've seen it over the years that when people try to chase that distance, and it can have an adverse effect at times.
Well, it's so true. It's like, I don't get it. Why people feel like they've got to hit their 7-iron 180 yards. And I've obviously lived in that time of my golfing life where I was like, I need to hit my 7-iron 180 yards. But now, like, I can tell you, when I hop on a golf course and I play, I maybe once or twice, I actually have a full swing. Like, yeah. I'm almost always clubbing up and swinging easier because I know it's going to spin too much, or I'm going to play it down, or I'm going to, I need it because of elevation. There's all kinds of different factors, but very rarely do I say this is an everything I've got 7-iron and, or a lob wedge or whatever. It's just, I can't play that game. And you look at some of the older swings of like the greats, like your Ben Hogan's and Sam Snead's and stuff. They didn't have that. They were hitting pitching wedges 110 yards, 115 yards. And so it's like they just realized that all you got to do is hit that particular club this same distance every single time and you're going to win. And I think Lee Westwood's kind of he obviously hits the ball good, but he's not in the 170 ball speeds like the most PGA Tour players. So he's essentially just playing his game and he is competing it incredibly well. So it's not about the distance.
I don't know. He might be in 170 ball speed. Really? He's been hitting the last 2 weeks. I don't know. It's been, and I didn't, like I said, I didn't pay attention on the last couple, but I mean, him on 16 last week at Bay Hill, you know, getting it out there 342. He didn't hit a small one. I mean, obviously it wasn't, because I think he had what do you have, 254 into 16 yesterday. And you had Justin Thomas, who had you know, 228. DeChambeau had 194 into 16. Let's see what he hit on 16. Like I said, he's not obviously not the longest out there, but not the shortest by any stretch of the imagination either. But I guess he did. He only hit at 272, and he said he had 247 to the hole on that. So maybe he was just really amped up on 16 yesterday. But you also have to hit a different type of shot. He definitely hit a cut on 16 to get it into the spot that he wanted it to. So didn't really let it rip.
I think there was a nasty headwind too. I remember JT hitting this really low snipe hook right up the fairway, and he carried it like 230, but it rolled out another 60 or 70 yards or something.
Yeah, something dumb. But like I said, I think he's still got adequate speed and distance, but you're right. He just kind of goes about it and plays his shot. He's not going to try to overpower the course, which, I mean, everybody should play their own game. You know, Rory was saying that, and it's just, you've got to play your own game, right? You can't do the things that Bryson does. The way that his body is made, the way his swing mechanics are, it maybe allows him to swing a little harder because of some things that he does. He's definitely not a one plane swing anymore with his speed, right? He's still, so he drops it down a little bit, but the way that he utilizes his body and moves his body, uses his lower body, makes a difference in the way that he can do it and the way his clubs are set up. You know, they're upright, one length, and some things that, you know, Rory was saying, he's like, I don't know why I tried to do this, because it got me out of what I was doing, right? You saw him do it kind of on number six at Bay Hill last week, where he tried to cover the water twice. Yep. It's just like, play it 10 yards. I mean, he didn't miss it by much, but play it 10 yards further right, and you're fine.
And for him, a smooth, easy drive is still like low 180 ball speeds.
Yeah.
And so he's going to be flying it 300 yards no matter what. And it's like, does he really need the extra 20?
No.
And I mean, he is so stinking good. I think there's, you know, not that I have any place to give him advice, but I just think there are other aspects of his game that he could work on rather than distance. So
yeah. Putting. Did we just
that name some?
Oh. But like I said, he just, like, if he would, like, how many times have you watched him play and he's playing good and all of a sudden a three putt hops up, or just, you know, something bad around the greens? It's like, take a cue from Dustin, who hits it far enough, who said, got with his coach and they basically decided that from 120 yards in, you've got to be the best player because you have a lot of those shots. Yeah. And as soon as that dropped down into the, where he was one of the best players from 120 yards in, as far as proximity to the hole, his putting got a lot better. It was crazy, but yeah. You know, he's still not the best. Dustin Johnson's still not the best putter on the planet, but he got really good with his wedges. And so he was closer to the hole, which makes things a lot easier. So.
Oh, totally. Totally. So yeah, that's, I think for him, he has off the tee figured out. So just leave it there and focus on your irons and focus on your wedges. And yeah, solid golf ahead for sure.
Yeah. Let's see if he can do that. He's kind of in a slump right now. And it's hard to say that because he did finish all right in the Arnold Palmer, but just been kind of an on and off type deal for Rory right now.
It kind of goes to show like how smart DJ is about stuff. Like, and that's kind of funny because most people see him as not the brightest guy, but he goes to his coach and he says, what do I need to work on? And his coach says, well, let's look at you statistically. Oh, you pretty much lead the tour in strokes gained off the tee with a driver. Yeah. Okay. We don't need to do anything there. Where do we need to increase? And here's Rory, who probably is one like decimal point behind, you know, DJ in strokes gained off the tee. And here he is trying to get more out of it. It's like so anti like data driven improvement. And so like, you got to look at the numbers, you got to know your stats. And it's like, if you walk off the course and you had 7 3 putts, don't go to the driving range. You go to the freaking putting green and you figure it out. So it's got to be data driven.
Yeah. And it's like I said, that seems like a move that's more ego driven than anything, which is, like I said, is dumb. Or, oh, it worked for that guy. Yes. But that guy's different than you are, you know?
Yep. At the same time, like, people don't, it's a total wow show when he's on the tee, but people don't realize how good of a putter Bryson is. Like, he's really good.
He's not consistent enough with his wedges. Because you'll see him, like, he did it a couple of times where he's just baffled by how far his wedges go. Well, it's like, well, yeah, your wedges are 37 inches. That's going to happen. They're probably 37 and a half. I think he's got them at 6 iron length, if I remember.
Yeah, 37 and a half.
So it's like, yeah, you're going to get some jumpers. The touch is going to go away with the longer club. Well, I don't know why he doesn't shorten those a little bit to try to get a little bit more touch.
To me, that would be the logical move. Like, at least a quarter inch shortening to add to it or whatever. But
yeah,
he's got his, I mean, who are we to complain here? He's got 12 PGA victories and a major. So it's like something's working. But I remember Rory talking about an advantage to having the length. When you have something that long, you can get through the rough better and faster and still retain spin. So there, I bet there's some statistical reason why he's still doing it. Otherwise he probably would have switched.
Yeah. I don't know if those few shots, right. Cause I think he loses more shots doing that because of his distance control issues at times with the wedges. Mm-hmm. But like you said, does he have 12 or is it 8?
Is it 8?
I don't know.
A lot.
He's got more than I have. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see kind of the sustainability of if you've looked at him, he's a little bit leaner than he was when he first came out. So
yeah,
he maybe he's changed up that routine of it, right? Still working on the speed and got the muscle gain that he needed. And now it's just kind of trying to maintain that and still get work on the speed.
Yeah.
But yes, Bryson is an underrated putter. I don't know what his strokes gain putting is, but I'm sure we could find that out if we wanted to look for it, but I don't, so we won't. But yeah, solid tournament. Upcoming is the Honda Classic this next week. Where is the Honda Classic played at? It is, and I should know this because it's just a PGA National champion course in Palm Beach. So I've got that upcoming. We'll look at the power rankings and then the European Tour. And another great thing about the European Tour is the tournament names that you get. It's the magical Kenyan Open this week at Karen Country Club in Nairobi, Kenya.
There it is.
So we'll see who's on that list. We'll talk about that again next week. I'll probably watch a little bit of it if it's on TV, because I do like their broadcast format better than I like the PGA Tour's broadcast format. So I'll probably try to catch a little bit of that, but not too much. we'll probably do some quick research on the winner, and that's about it. And other than that, those are the only two major tour events going on. I didn't even look. We didn't even look if there was a Corn Ferry tour event. But they haven't been a lot of hype about them, and they haven't been on TV, so it makes it a little harder to follow without doing a little bit of research. And my research is going into the PGA Tour tournaments right now and the bigger tours, be honest on that. So power rankings. Who do we got as the power rankings? Daniel Berger's on the cover. So let's see, because he did end up making the cut, didn't he? This last week, Berger?
Tied for ninth at the Players.
Oh, so he came back and I think he had a good final round. I didn't even realize that. I think I saw it, but I didn't like actually realize that.
Yeah, he shot 5 under, 67. So,
so great, pretty solid round. Let's see. Top on that list is Daniel Berger. Mm-hmm. Lee Westwood coming in at number two. He's making a habit of number two. I don't know. I don't know if how Lee Westwood's going to fare. 2 weeks leading after 54 holes. Like I said, that grind's got to get to you at some point. But to round up the top five, you got Sungjae Im, Russell Henley, and Brendan Steele. So
I'm just going to go out and say it, that none of those people are going to win.
Not one of those top five is going to win.
One of those top five.
So anybody that's on the PGA Tour power ranking, are they going to win is the question.
That's a good question. I do believe JT was on the power rankings last week.
Yes.
But yeah, I don't know. I think somebody's going to come out of the woodworks on this one.
You're calling for kind of a dark horse coming out of this field. Let's see. Just trying to think. Somebody who's there. I'm going to see. I've got a guy in mind. Let's see if he's playing this week before I. No, I cannot. Ryan Palmer is not playing. He was kind of on my list, but I don't know. Like I said, there's a lot of guys taking some weeks off, so it's not a super strong field. Obviously, right after the Players, you get some guys taking a rest. I don't know, man. It's a tough one. I'm looking at this and I'm like, I don't see anybody I like like standing out. But I don't know. Anybody you feel is going to kind of. I think he's on the power ranking. Joaquin Niemann has a chance, I think.
Yeah, he's in the power ranking.
He is in the power ranking.
I think I'm going to throw in oh, man. I always want to pick Fleetwood for something. And just because he didn't play well last tournament, sometimes it's just the course. And I think the hunt is going to set up a little bit better for him. So
yeah, he did miss the cut. So he's a little bit there. It's nothing, just nothing for me. I got absolutely nothing. Let's just go, because it'd be fun. I watched an interview with with this guy, Harry Higgs.
Harry Higgs.
We're going to go Harry Higgs and his no buttons. He actually said that he's like, Grayson sent him some 4-button shirts. So one of those buttons will get buttoned. But he's like, if it's anything less than 4 buttons, he's like, none, zero. but he was a pretty funny interview. So it was, I'm going to go with, let's root for Harry Higgs and see what happens. And again, guys, don't put money on anything that we do, because that hasn't led to prosperity so far, our picks.
Nope.
But it'll be fun. Like I said, not as fun as the last 2 weeks. Not as fun as the last kind of 3 weeks, actually. With the WGC leading into the Palmer and then the Players' Championship. So it won't be quite as good, but it'll be fun anyway. But
yeah, I think at this point it's really just Masters countdown time. So I believe it's like T minus 21 days till the Masters, folks.
Holy crap. Yeah, it is. Well, yeah, that's something to look forward to for sure. And back in on its regular scheduled time, with limited fans.
Actually, no par 3 contest. They canceled that.
Did they cancel the par 3 contest? I haven't been. Yeah, that just. Why did they cancel the par 3 contest?
That's where the crowds usually sit really close, and the patrons. Sorry, the patrons.
Patrons. Yes, you got to use the proper Augusta vernacular. Yep. But they've limited the field, so it's not like there's not going to be a ton of patrons there. I don't
like, know. Just freaking televise it for me and have no patrons. Yeah. Like, there's
no patrons on the par three par three contest.
Yeah. And the people they have on the bag are like kids, which are like zero risk. And then you've got, you know, everybody else who's COVID tested. So you literally have a perfect and shielded environment when you could have that. But okay.
Not our call. But if anybody wants to pass along that note about what Buttercuts feels, that's it. So let's go with that. Any golf this weekend for you, this upcoming weekend?
Oh, you know what? It is a monumental year for me. I am turning 40 in a couple of days. So my 40th birthday is to go on a golf trip. I have not zeroed in on exactly what it is, but I have run the numbers on Bandon. So
Bandon's fun. Might want to get that in, because they are pretty much booked.
Yeah, no, we already have it booked.
You have okay.
Yeah.
You already have it booked, guys.
It's just whether I'm gonna pull the trigger on it or not. So because it looks like with as much golf as we're gonna play, flight, rental, food, accommodations, golf, I'm probably going to be into it about $1,800. Yeah. So
sounds about right.
Yeah. It's, but I've heard it's an amazing experience.
It is an amazing experience. yes. I'm pushing you to go do it. Ours, my yearly, well, for the last 2 years. But this year, because he was the guy who normally books it, was a little slow, so we don't have it booked until 2022 now. But I do have a Pinehurst trip coming up at the end of June, so that's okay. And I will be playing some golf this weekend. We're going down to Mesquite to do some fittings, and then we're staying over Saturday and Sunday to play some golf. Probably Saturday in Vegas somewhere, and then at Conestoga in Mesquite on Sunday morning, and then back home. So it'll be a fun weekend no matter what. But you, no golf this weekend. Unless it's supposed to be nice, I think.
If it's nice, then yeah, I'll find a way to get on the course for sure. So I definitely need to do it. The last time I actually swung a golf club on a golf course was October. So it's, I mean, I've certainly spent my hours practicing, keeping my swing up and doing that kind of stuff. So not much rust to break off, but yeah, I needed to go do the real thing.
Yeah. It's like I said, mine was November till a few weeks ago. And then again, this last week, but two weekends in a row, which will be very nice. Start to get the game sharpened up before US Open qualifier in about a month and a half ish, yeah. Month and a half ish. But any parting words to the listeners, any parting words of wisdom, leading into the week?
Yeah. Parting words would be, if you're wondering what part of your game you should work on, it's chipping and putting. That's the best wisdom I can get
you. And I've given it to my students is, if you're the best inside 100 yards, you will compete always.
Oh yeah. And like, the only thing I ever want is to be like, if a group of guys that are golfers talk about me and I'm not there, I'm hoping they say the phrase, that guy can get up and down out of a trash can. Like that's what I want to be known as. And if I did, I would probably be on tour. Like, honestly, those are the kind of guys that play just sick golf. So yeah, that's my goal.
Exactly. Making a lot out of nothing is usually that.
Yep.
But mine is just go play golf. Go play golf. Have some fun.
Love it. All
right, everybody. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Buttercuts Podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please leave us a rating, review, and subscribe. We appreciate it. Until next time, keep hitting the buttercut.